Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in to our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
Today on Family Talk.
John chapter 1, verse 12 says, "Yet to all who did receive him, he gave the right to become children of God." What a profound concept. When we accept Christ as our Savior, he adopts us as his children. We are no longer slaves to our old ways, but made new in Jesus. You're tuned to Family Talk, a part of the James Dobson Family Institute. On today's broadcast, you'll hear the testimony of a couple who have experienced that life transformation through accepting Christ. It's a classic conversation Dr. Dobson had 30 years ago with Ad and B.J. Coors. Ad is the great-grandson of Adolph Coors, the founder of Coors Brewery. Today, Ad talks about the struggles of his early life, which stem from his father's premature death. BJ explains to Dr. Dobson how these problems impacted their marriage and relationship. They also admitted that despite their fame, fortune, and success, their lives felt empty and without purpose. Again, we've dug deep into the broadcast vault for this conversation dating back to the mid-1980s, so Dr. Dobson's voice may sound a little different than it does today. Here now is the first part of this interview on this edition of Family Talk.
There are several reasons why your names ought to be familiar with our listeners today. First of all, because, Ad, especially, you are going around the country at this time sharing your testimony. But there's another reason why the name Coors ought to be recognized by some of our listeners. Tell us about that.
Well, I think probably the reason you're referring to Dr. Dobson is the name of Coors Beer, which is a name that's probably pretty well recognized around this country. The brewery was started by my great-grandfather. He was an immigrant from Germany at the age of 25 and came to Denver, Colorado, almost penniless. And within a period of a year and a half after arriving in Denver, with another gentleman, started the brewery. And
now, he was Adolph Coors the first, and you are Adolph Coors the fourth.
That's correct.
Is there going to be a fifth? BJ?
There is a fifth
there
at home.
There is a fifth. Mm-hmm. And you have two children, don't you?
Two children.
Ah. BJ, tell us what BJ stands for as a place to get introduced to you, will you?
I used to tell people it standed for Beulah Jewel, but it actually stands for Betty Jane.
Betty Jane. Uh-huh. BJ and the Bear.
Right.
Okay. Ad, you began your life with some stormy experiences. As a way of kind of getting started today, tell us what your childhood was like and your adolescence and some of those early struggles that you've had to overcome.
Well, looking back, Dr. Dobson, on my childhood, I would say the vast majority of my young childhood was very happy. My father, whom I really, really worshipped as a god to me, because I really admired this man immensely, was a very good, not only a good husband, but a good father to us kids. I came from a family of four kids, two older sisters and one younger brother. And I can remember back in my early childhood of really being very happy. He was an outdoors man. He was not only chairman of the Adolph Coors Company, chairman of the board, but he was the founder of the Aspen Ski Corporation, an avid outdoorsman, loved skiing, was one of the owners of a local professional baseball team in Denver, was involved in many outside interests other than the brewery. The brewery was not his god. I can really emphasize that. It was not number one in his life. We were number one in my dad's life.
When you were 14 years of age, an event took place which was to have a major significance in your life. Describe that for us.
My father had decided about a year and a half before this to move to Morrison, Colorado, which is a community outside of Denver on the foothills, about 20 miles west of Denver. He was, as I mentioned earlier, an avid outdoorsman, and he had purchased a cattle ranch near Morrison, Colorado. In February of 1960, on his way to work one morning, he stopped along the side of a highway to help what he thought was a stranded motorist. This motorist was not stranded. In fact, he had an ulterior motive, and this man shot my father. And at that time, we didn't know exactly what happened to him. We came home from school that afternoon, and Mom greeted all of us kids at the front door of our home and told all of us what had happened. And fact, at that time, we didn't even know whether he was alive or dead, Dr. Dobson. All she told us before she passed out was, your dad has been shot and kidnapped, and we don't know whether you'll see him alive again. And that was her exact quote. I can remember standing in that room that day looking at my two sisters and my brother, and we're just absolutely stunned. We didn't even know what to say, because he was really our God. He made all of our decisions for us as the head of the family. Our family was of a typical German family where Dad was the absolute ruler, and we needed him and depended upon him, and now he was gone from us, and my God really had been taken from me. And I remember standing there and looking at the floor and saying, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Every night after that, going to bed and praying to a God I thought I knew, I was raised in the Episcopal Church, and remember as a child going to church every Sunday to find a God on our own, because Dad never went to church with us, nor did Mom. But we were to find God if he existed, I guess. The kidnapping happened in 1960, February 9th. And I remember praying until September, the end of September, when they found his remains near Castle Rock. You probably know where Castle Rock is. As I share with people, I not only lost my earthly father, but I lost my heavenly father. Because I gave up. I said, he must not be there. He don't care about me. And I quit praying. I quit going to church. I really withdrew into myself at that point, and I said, I'm going to make it through life on my own guts, and whatever I can get out of this life, I'm going to get it.
From a psychological point of view, it was a terrible time to have something like that happen, because just at the start of adolescence, with all of those adjustments anyway, and then to have to grapple with the issue of who is God, must have been a tremendous difficulty.
Dr. Dobson, the last night I saw Dad alive, I remember this, February 8th, 1960, we had a horrible fight, and being a typical 14-year-old, I'm sure I'd probably forgotten to shovel a box or something, and Dad, being a stern disciplinarian, as I shared earlier, blew up at me, and I went to bed mad at him, and he at me, and Dad had a habit of getting up every morning and going to work before we got up to go to school. And Dad was gone February 9th, and I never saw him again, but throughout these last 20 years, I many times have thought if I could have 5 minutes with Dad, to put my arms around him and say, thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for trying to make me into a man, and thanks for devoting your life to us, and thanks for having your priorities right. I want to share with men to get your priorities right. And in our family, God is number one, and my wife is number two, and my children number three, and my business is down the line, because none of us know how much time we have left. I was in a near-fatal head-on automobile collision back in 1973 and should have been, for all intensive purposes, a vegetable today, or even killed. But God had his hand upon my life, even though I didn't give my life to him for 2 more years after that. But none of us know. And I mean to say that time does not shout, it just runs out sooner than we think. And how I wish I could have 5 more minutes with Dad, but those days are gone. So we have a habit in our home every night of saying our prayers and having family devotions before we go to bed, and hugging our kid and saying we love him. And I love my wife and she loves me, because none of us know what the next day may bring.
You know, my own father was not expected to live through the night, and I was granted 5 more minutes with him. In fact, I was granted 76 more days from that time. It's really a shame that we have to face death before we realize that we hang by a thread, really, and that this life is passing very, very rapidly, and we must do today what we will wish we had done when we're facing the end of it.
Let me share a little bit. Maybe it'll add some more insight into this about our family. You know, I was destined, being Adolf Coors IV, I was destined to become the next chairman and president of that brewery. Because in our family, the senior male member of each generation is programmed, if you might say, by my grandfather to be the next heir apparent. And you had to go to Exeter or Andover prep school. You had to take chemical engineering. And I can remember failing high school chemistry. And I remember not getting into Exeter because I applied for Exeter right after my father's death, Dr. Dobson. And obviously I was not in any mental state to take the exam. And I failed, and I was the first male member not to go to Exeter prep school. And I began now at this stage at 14 years of age, beginning to say, you're a failure.
Yeah.
Because I didn't measure up to what the family wanted me to be. And I began to withdraw, and I began to get a terrible inferiority complex. Mm. And to this day, I'm still wrestling with part of that. And it's something that just, without Christ, I couldn't handle it, I don't think.
BJ, now you grew up in the same area. Did you know Ad at that time? Were you all acquainted as children?
Well, we met early in the seventh and eighth grades. And I didn't know him well, but I did remember reading about his father in the newspaper. And just my heart went out for the whole family. And we became much closer in about a year or two after the kidnapping.
Ah. Now, you came on through the adolescent years, Ad, and then joined the Marine Corps. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I, at this point, was 17 years of age, and summer of 1964, I spent part of the summer with a cousin of mine who was a full colonel in the Marines. And he saw a young man who was, at that point, desperate to find some kind of identity in life and searching for the meaning of life and really struggling with some bitterness. I was extremely bitter about life at this point. And he suggested rather firmly that I join the Marines for a four-year stint. And I talked him out down to 3 years. He accepted 3 years, and which I did at the age of 17. I can remember my first 6 months in boot camp as being rather brutal because I was surrounded by men who hated me from day one because of my background and my name, and proceeded to try to break me down every way they possibly could, short of taking my life. I mean, literally, brutal treatment.
How'd you react to the discipline of the Marine Corps?
I thrived upon it. One thing that my father instilled in me at a very early age, and that was, you don't get anything out of this life if you're not a disciplined, hardworking individual. He rode me very hard as a young child. Work ethic and the importance of doing things right. The main thing that took place there, Dr. Dobson, that probably kept me from coming to the Lord at an earlier age, was the idea that I can do whatever I set my mind to apart from any outside help. I remember I had lost my God, and I was now going to go through life and get out of it whatever I wanted to get out of it, but it was up to me. I could not rely on anybody else's help. So these men began to lean on me and began to try to break me down, and I began to withdraw into myself, and I began to become a very quiet, self-sufficient. Yeah. I depended upon nobody. And I was going to make it through the Marines because of, I was going to be determined to be the best Marine that ever came out of boot camp.
I'm Roger Marsh, and you are listening to Family Talk. Did you know that our ministry is completely listener-supported? Here at the James Dobson Family Institute, we rely on God through your generous financial support. So every gift you give, whether big or small, has tremendous impact on the people we're helping. If you're able to donate, go to drjamesdobson.org. You can find out how to give a gift online, or call toll-free at 877-732-6825 for more information on making a contribution over the phone. Thanks so much for your prayers and your financial support. We have greatly appreciated your assistance this summer, and we hope you'll continue to stand with us throughout the fall. Let's rejoin today's conversation now. It featured Dr. Dobson and Ad and BJ Coors right here on Family Talk.
Ad, now I know that when you got out of the Marine Corps, you and BJ got married, and that's the part of the story that I think people are going to identify with because many of us have been right there. Tell us a little bit about that now.
Well, I had dated my wife on and off for a number of years prior to that, and I felt if I could now marry her that my problems would be over. I'd be happy. We'd ride off into the sunset, so to speak. And we got married shortly after my discharge from the Marine Corps. And now I had to decide what I was going to do with my life. I knew that to become the head of that brewery, which I at that point did not want to do, I had to go to certain colleges and take certain courses. And I knew I'd failed high school chemistry and failed college chemistry. I probably wasn't going to become a chemical engineer. So I'd always had extreme interest in stocks and bonds and commodities, so I felt I'd go to Wall Street to make a fortune there and earn $1 million by the time I was 30, and life would be happy then if I could do that. And I began to realize at a very early age in my business career that men wanted me not for me, but for my name and what they could gain from that name.
And if I can interject, it's really interesting to me that people who have feelings of inadequacy and inferiority for their own reasons even interpret their assets as liabilities. You know, everything is turned so that it looks like an additional dead weight to carry. Here you had a name that people recognized, and you had the materialistic aspect of what goes along with that. One would think that would open doors, and yet from the frame of mind you were in at that time, it looked like an additional liability to you.
I began to become very distrusting of everybody. But let me make a recommendation to men out in the audience today, Dr. Dawson. My wife warned me on several business ventures. I didn't listen to her, that she knew there was something wrong with these things. And I wish now today I'd listened to her, because I think we men miss a great deal of help when we don't listen to our wives, and I really recommend it.
Let's listen to your wife at this moment. BJ, what were you feeling at that time? What was going on in your early marriage? What was it like? Was the turmoil that Ad is telling us about here evident in your relationship?
I'm not sure anyone else would have recognized that, but we definitely felt it between the two of us. We were married very young. I would consider it young today. I was 20, almost 21. And he was 21. And looking back on it 14 years later, it's a miracle of God that we are where we are now, because we were so young and I didn't know why we got married. I would look for different qualities today.
Were you a Christian?
No.
Neither of you were Christians. Were you fussing and fighting a lot?
Yes, I would say that we did that. I discovered when we were married, first married, I think that my model would have to have been my own mother and my own father, because I had no one else to look to. And so when I got married, I expected that I would be treated the same way my father had treated my mother, which was putting her on a pedestal and just sort of looking up at her, and she could do no wrong. And
I take it Ed didn't treat you quite that way.
No, he didn't treat me quite that way. And he was modeling himself after his own father. We're just grateful that my mother and his father never got married, because they wouldn't have made it. But what also happened was I at first, in the first part of our marriage, took the leadership a little bit more than I should have, again, modeling myself after my mother. She always seemed to take care of the books and that sort of thing, because my dad didn't have time and he didn't care. So I did that. At first, I'd keep the checkbook and all of this, and Ad went to the accountant with our first income tax. And the accountant asked him lots of questions, and he just sat there and couldn't answer any of them. And he came home and he said, "You're never going to write another check or keep the books anymore," because I was so humiliated today that I could not answer it. So that was the start when we started putting the responsibility over on him. But the reason I took it was because I didn't see him wanting it, and I knew somebody had to take charge. And I was too independent, which didn't make him be needed.
Now, I understand that the searching that was going on for who you really were in adolescence continued through the Marine Corps and into your adult life, and that you were looking for a sense of purpose and meaning, and you looked for it in Wall Street, you looked for it in marriage, you looked for it in money, you looked for it in success, and you found it nowhere, and you came back to the brewery. You decided that you would try to fulfill this obligation to the family of becoming president of Coors Beer. Tell me what happened then.
Well, when I had not succeeded in my purpose as a broker and as in several other business ventures, I sat one morning before my uncle Bill, who's chairman of the board, and asked Bill, which is very hard for me to do because at this point I was extremely full of pride and ego, and I asked Bill if I could have a job, and I can safely say Bill Coors never heard of the story of the prodigal son in the Bible. And Bill didn't open up his arms and didn't say welcome back. He, as a matter of fact, said, "I don't know whether we can use you." I was expected to, you know, be at least brought into a vice presidential position because of my experience on Wall Street, and I'd been a Marine. And but my first assignment was a tour guide. And that was an extremely humbling experience, to say the least.
What would people do when you would tell them you were going to take them through the brewery, and then, by the way, my name is Adolf Coors the Fourth? Did they believe you?
No, Dr. Dobson, there were some rather interesting comments. I remember one was this gentleman came up to me afterward, and he said, "You introduced your name as Adolf Coors." I had to chuckle because I'm Napoleon Bonaparte.
And BJ, the marriage was not going well at this time. In fact, I understand it was going downhill. Tell me what you were feeling now at this stage in your lives.
It was definitely going downhill. I was feeling really like, is this all there is? I'd wake up in the morning and looking around, we had everything that should make me happy. We had a healthy son, we had a nice home, nice friends, but I just felt so empty inside. And I'd even ask my husband about this, and I'd say, "Don't you really think there's got to be more than we have now?" And he was searching for it in a different way than I was. He was searching for it in the business world, whereas my life was at home And my feelings of self-esteem came from him, and I wasn't getting any good feelings from him about myself. And I was trying to change him, continually just trying to mold him into what I thought would make me happy in a man. And I had no success.
What aspects of Ad's personality or his behavior and mannerism toward you were you working on? What was frustrating you the most? What did you want from him that you weren't getting? I ask that question because I suspect there are an awful lot of people who are listening who are right now where you were.
Well, first of all, I wanted attention. I wanted more affection and tenderness, more of that. And basically, he is not that type of a person, and I think the Marine Corps didn't help any of that. The discipline he got in the Marine Corps drove me crazy.
Marines are not known for tenderness.
No.
I think that's not one of their long suits.
And that's what I was searching for. I was searching for someone who lived right now instead of living for the next hour or the next event, someone who just enjoyed being right now instead of worrying about where we had to go or what we had to do next.
Did you enjoy the role of motherhood at that stage?
Yes, I
did. So you did find fulfillment with your son?
Mm-hmm, I did.
But did not find it in your marriage or in your life?
No. I was doing everything to try to keep busy, doing volunteer work, junior league, all of that, and none of that was fulfilling. And I couldn't believe that all of these women who are in those sort of things were being fulfilled. And I looked at them and I thought, gee, they are. What's wrong with me? I'm not feeling it.
There are a lot of people listening to us, BJ, who feel like that most of their problems result from the fact that they don't have enough money to go around. And if they had a big bank account, they could fly off to New York or Paris or someplace. They could buy a wardrobe. They could hire people to do the work that they don't like doing. They could clothe their children better. They could find psychiatric help for their emotional problems, and that they'd have no difficulties. You had the money to do those things. Why were you not satisfied?
Well, you know what you just said. I felt just the opposite. I felt that if we had not had so much money, that things would be better, that we'd be able to work together as a team. I would see my friends, they would save and save for a sofa, and they would just work together and they'd plan for it. And I thought, that's how they're getting closer together, because they're really striving for something as a team. And I knew that we weren't doing that because we could just decide what we wanted and go out and buy it. And there was none of that planning.
Mm-hmm. The sense of accomplishment,
yes.
Of struggle,
yes.
And growth and saving,
yes.
And building and doing things together.
Ad is and was very generous, and he always was giving me things. And this may seem like I'm not grateful, but what I really wanted were not the things that he could give me, but I wanted him. I just wanted him, and he was not able to give me that, and was not able to communicate and to open up in that way. So the way his substitution would be to give me things. And then he would be hurt when I didn't appreciate what he was wanting to give me.
I've seen this same pattern repeatedly, just over and over again, where a husband has felt that his success in business and the things that he achieved and the fruits of his labor should be enough to make his wife happy. And it's a great shock to him to find out that not only does it not make her happy, but she resents it. And she's feeling like that job and that money is a competitor. And it's often a seeming contradiction between a husband and wife.
This drove a wedge, Dr. Dobson, in our marriage relationship. In my own mind, this really took us downhill at a faster pace.
She didn't respect what your family was and what you were and where you came from.
Mm-hmm. I began to work for a man who my father had hired about 20 years earlier. And one night, just out of courtesy, I asked him to come and bring his wife to dinner so we could get to know them better. And I'll never forget that night as long as I live. I was nervous about having a vice president in our home. I was a new employee at our brewery, and I didn't really know what to say. And I remember BJ and I looked at each other when they came in the door that night, and we said, there's something about these people that is different. What do they have? This woman, the wife of this man, just absolutely glowed. That's the only way I can describe it. And BJ, I think out of courtesy, looked at Vera's son. Vera was the name of this gal, and she said, Vera, what are some of your interests? And Vera looked up from her plate without hesitation. She said, Jesus Christ. A bomb had been dropped on our table.
You You have been listening to a classic broadcast here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. It featured a conversation Dr. Dobson had with Ad and BJ Coors. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's broadcast. You can contact us here in Colorado Springs at 877-732-6825. We're also available if you're just looking to chat or if you'd like someone to pray with you. Our representatives are able to help you. They can also direct you to one of our helpful resources as well. So call us at 877-732-6825. We really enjoy connecting with you, and we love hearing how Family Talk is impacting you and your family. Thanks for tuning in today, and be sure to join us again tomorrow. You'll hear the conclusion of Dr. James Dobson's conversation with Ad and BJ Coors as they unpack how their search for meaning in life ended with finding purpose in Jesus. Don't miss their moving testimony next time here on Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Have a great day.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.